at the house.
Blog Talk Radio.
York to Bishop's Rock off the English coast in 3 days, 10 hours, and 40 minutes, the liner United States established a new Atlantic speed record, July 6, 1952. Cheering crowds at Southampton hailed the American ship that had clipped 10 hours from the transatlantic mark set by Britain's own Queen Mary. Then westbound, the United States knifing through the Atlantic for her second record crossing. It was noted by the builders of the ship that in the event of necessity for emergency conversion to military service, the United States could transport 14,000 men, or virtually a full division, 10,000 miles without putting into port for food, fresh water, or fuel. But for the crew and officials and passengers aboard the liner, the greatest moment was now at hand. The United States was reaching Ambrose Lightship outside New York with the Blue Riband of the Atlantic, having made the return trip in a record 3 days, 12 hours, 12 minutes. Saluting the ship whose maiden voyage shattered Atlantic speed marks going over and coming back. At the turn of the century and beyond, Great Britain and Germany dominated leadership in fast Atlantic crossings. Now, for the first time in almost 100 years, the speed crown was claimed by the Stars and Stripes. New York, home port for many of the greatest ships on the oceans, really put on a show. A big broom symbolized the sweep of the Blue Ribbon Speed Trophy by the $70 million United States, America's first lady of the high seas.
Good afternoon and welcome to America's Disabled Veterans in Action. I'm Dr. George Anderson and I'm joined on the air with Joyce Trumpet today. We are here this afternoon giving you this afternoon's edition of America's Disabled Veterans in Action. We have on the line with us a Afghanistan war veteran, Afghanistan-Iraqi war veteran, who uses a service dog and is hailing from the state of a great state of Alaska. Let me bring him on. Kermit, are you there?
I'm here.
All right. We have a Mr. Kermit Scott with us. Kermit, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about who you are and your relevance to your service dog? You were sharing a little bit. I'm sorry to have you repeat yourself, but we're live now, so I want to focus in on your story because what's happening to you is just unbelievable. Go ahead, share. I'm going to turn over the mic for a moment.
I'm a 35-year-old Iraq and Afghanistan combat wounded vet. My last tour was in the Kunar province in Afghanistan where I got wounded and had to medically discharge and I basically retired here in Alaska from Fort Campbell, and I got outfitted with a service dog, which has been a blessing. He does 80 things, which are totally unbelievable. He can dress me. He remembers where I need to go. Does all sorts of stuff. But I ran into an issue where I was supposed to go to treatment at a VA facility and Seattle, Washington, and Seattle, Washington decided that, hey, we're going to refuse treatment because of your service dog, and you're not going to get any treatment. So basically, I had my dog discriminated against, and I was refused treatment. And I was like, really? I was like, is that even possible? I was like, you got ADA guidelines, which basically state that, you know, he's treated kind of like a human being. And he helps me with mobility, stability, and with my mental alertness and stuff like that. So he's like my right-hand man. But I was totally dumbfounded by that.
You know, sometimes it completely amazes me how people can assume that a dog a service dog is a pet, or that a service dog can be separated from its owner for the sake of convenience, or what they deem convenience is. Because convenience to a person, especially a veteran with a disability, it can be enough to cause harm, actually. Because, you know, being a veteran myself, being someone who has used service dogs, someone who has faced discrimination, it can actually cause harm to a great extent, which I'm sure you've experienced by the denial. You're looking to get help.
Yeah. And this is not the first time, you know. It's not the first time. I take them different places, and, you know, I've had resistance, and, you know, I try to educate people instead of, you know, straight complaining against them. So I try to try to educate people. But this facility basically was like, no, basically get out of our face. We're going to refuse your treatment. We're going to discriminate against you. And I was like, oh, okay, so this is how it's going to be. So basically I got to be vocal and basically make sure that nobody like myself or follows in my footsteps that has a service dog that has to go through what I went through.
Yes. Well, see, I this is one of the reasons why we address this issue on America's Disabled Veterans in Action, because it is about access. We have to be able to do what we need to do for the veteran and to meet the veteran where the need exists. You have a need. You have a need, and that need requires for you to use a service dog. Would they take away your cane if you had a cane? Is that an optional equipment? Because the last Title 38, a service dog is viewed as a prosthetic, and a prosthetic is a device that's life necessary.
And that's what they tried to throw at me. They're like, can you use a cane? I was like, that's a prosthetic. It cannot pick me up, or if I say brace, if I decide to have a vertigo episode, it can't brace and pick me up and, you know, bring me upright. And they got quiet. I was like, see? I was like, do you kind of get my point? They didn't have anything to answer about that.
One of the things now, when you got your recommendation now for your service dog, did the VA write it?
Yeah.
Initially?
Actually, the military, on the military side and the VA side, they both have it in tandem. So they both have it in their records.
Well, you know, I recently had a situation where I was told, in California, in Southern California, by one of the transporting authorities that I could not bring my service dog. And what I ended up doing was I took the VA letter that was written for me by my doctor, and I took it to the people providing the transportation and gave it to them. Because a lot of times, I get into a lot of attention because I have two small service dogs. I didn't start out to have two, but they've been together so long, it's kind of hard to separate them at this point. But the end result of it is one would have been with me longer and is more of a reliable service dog. The second one was a rescue. I had intended to give her away, but the end result was that the veteran that she was intended for didn't want to separate her from my service dog. So I have two service dogs. But they're small. They're fairly small. But they help me with just about everything from eating to alertness and, you know, simple protection like scouting the house when I'm coming in at night, you know, different things like that because I go out at night sometimes. So
we have moose out here, and my service dog can block a moose out here. So, yeah, it's kind of amazing.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so they look out for us, and that is important. You know, so we have to do what we can to we have to do what we can to make sure that we can do something for our community, and that's through advocacy. See, because just like we're talking about things that are here, we have people that are in Washington, D.C. that call us. We have people in Florida that call us. Now we're helping you with Washington State. So the end thing is that this is not something that is just far-flung. It's happening across the nation. And this is why I tell veterans that as a news source, we have to focus on your issue. Your issue looks like it's just you up north in Alaska fighting with the VA in Washington State. But just a few months ago, we had a young lady from Chicago who went to New York State that tried to do the same thing. Now, if there's one where there's one, and now we have two, I'm sure there are other situations where they're doing these types of shakedowns. And these are the things that we try to tell the community at large to talk to, not only just us, but when you're having the discussion with your congressional representatives to bring this to their attention, because it's not just us. Your phone call represents 500 to your congressman, but when we get people who are listening to us on a daily basis through Facebook, we're reaching about 250,000 people per week now. So the thing is that if we're talking about these issues and we can get the people to talk about it, then all of a sudden it's not just Kermit. It's Kermit in 2,500. Yeah.
As Kermit and we the people all united.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's what I'm telling people, because the thing is that we have to speak up. We have to let them know. This is the exact same reason why we're advocating for and trying to prepare for presidential debates, because this is policy that's being written for us by 535 people on Capitol Hill, but it has to be enforced by one person in the executive office. We don't look a lot at the executive office, but there's stuff that's happening there too, but we have 535 that are writing the policy that is actually affecting us, and that's where we try to really, really focus, because if we don't, we might miss something. Like,
oh yeah.
For example, one of the things that we've been rallying against this year in the House has been, H.R., let me find it. Hang on one second. It's H.R. 1627, I think it is. And what that is, it sounds so, oh, well, we want just one organization to certify all service dogs across the United States. This is what this is. But it's in the Camp Lejeune bill for the Graywater. Hidden within that, we 1627, H.R. 1627, Section 109. And it affects us so greatly because they were trying to limit it to, if you didn't pass this group's qualification list, which was arbitrary, because, Kermit, your disability, although we're veterans of different eras, the thing is your disability may be different from mine. My disability may be different from Joyce Trumpet, you know, but the end result of it is, the end result of it is that the dogs are required to do certain things. I may not need my dog to open the door for me. I may be ambulatory, but I may have needs because I have a hidden disability that you're not aware of. You know, and this is what you have to get people to understand, because sometimes they don't get it. Sometimes, you know, you have issues with walking and everything and being ambulatory. So you would require a larger dog, you know, and you're in Alaska, so, and you're dealing with moose, as you were telling.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I got,
you know,
a lab, and you have a lab, and he has a nice big old American flag jacket on, a vest, so he's identified as a service dog, so I'm kind of proud of that, because you got people that don't understand out here about service dogs, so I try to educate them out here, too, as well.
And see, I go one step further. I am a child of the March on Washington and signs of segregation. And I will go around, and I don't invite fights. I don't invite, tell everybody to do it. But I wore one sign that said United States Air Force. After that, I don't put on any more signs. I tell people that I have a service dog. My dogs don't normally wear vests and signs and different things, and I know people say it invites fights, but the reason why I don't do it is because I don't want people, I don't want to stick out like a sore thumb, so to speak, with my disability. And a lot of times people don't bother me, but I do have the pocket cards. I've trained my own dogs through the years. Traveled with them. They've been in the halls of Congress. They've been on Capitol Hill, everywhere that you can be in D.C. They've been with me. So the thing about it is that they do their job as service dogs for me. But if I had to depend on one organization to say that I have to meet their list of what their arbitrary certification may be beyond a good citizenship test. I'm talking about, you know, standard good dog behavior. I kind of have a problem with that because it limits the access for veterans that may be in distress. Because if you get a veteran that may be in distress right now, I know of a veteran that is kind of in distress because three dogs have died on that veteran in the last week. It's one of the saddest stories I've heard all week. But they need to get a service dog because they also lost their spouse in the process of losing three dogs. So I kind of think that if this veteran could get another dog, it might be helpful right about now. You know what I mean? But sometimes, because when you go into these situations, you've got such a long wait that you got to wait for the dog. And sometimes there's even fees involved. Not all the time. Not all the times are there, because we do work with an organization that I'm trying to get the veteran in contact with. But the whole thing is together, us working together, is how we do it. Because if we don't speak up as a community of veterans that are using service dog and bring together our common experience, then we can't advocate for one another. And we understand each other, because sometimes you got to work with what you're given. You know, you don't always have a perfect situation. Sometimes that dog may walk into your life and save your life. It may not always be what you thought the dog should be, but if that dog and you can work it out, you've got something that will help the veteran. It's 9 times out of 10, reduce suicide and give them encouragement to get through. Because there's just something about the help and assistance of a dog. I may be a bit biased, though.
No, you're completely right. Yeah, Cooper's been by my side. I mean, I blacked out and fell over a couple times, and you know, next thing you know, he's right by my side. He went to go get help, but came right by my side, licked my face, tried to wake me up, and, you know, he's like, I'm here. You can see it in his eyebrows. I'm like, man, I was like, okay, you know what, I can't replace you with, that's just a priceless moment.
Yeah, I mean, and they do. I mean, they keep you alert, and they keep you tuned in to what's going on, and it makes such a difference. In the quality of life overall, I find for me, you know, I have not had issues with mobility as much as just getting older. But the fact of the matter is that even with that, they encourage and help me to move about and do what I have to do. And so I'm very encouraged by my dog, and I get the feeling in that sense that you are too.
Yep. You know? He's also in tune. He's kind of like the squad leader, he's the infantryman, and he keeps all of us together. He's like the point man, and he'll make sure that, like, he'll look back and make sure everybody's together and nobody's out of ranks, and he's just super awesome. I'm like, okay. And then if anybody gets in our space, he'll block them off so that I won't get, like, you know, hyper-vigilant and get, you know, alerted and stuff like that. So he's a great dog.
Well, I'm thinking that we should have on Monday, some conversation for the great senators from Alaska to talk to them about the predicament that we face with service dogs. I think that I've been telling people to try to get people to advocate, but Kermit, I'm thinking that I need to give out the capital number again, because the fact of the matter is that we need to get people informed. And it just doesn't have to be the senators from Alaska, because the thing is that we have this item, this one item on service dogs and expanding service dog access, that it should be something. So you can tell them about the story that you heard on ADDIA of our veteran friend, Kermit Scott, in Alaska. Now,
I've reached out to Dan Sullivan, who's the a senator, and he's going to bat for me right now.
Okay.
Basically, he's going to do a congressional inquiry as to why. I mean, he's heated right now, and he's going to try to find out the reason why. So I've got one senator in my pocket that's on our side. That's pretty much all I have right now.
What we try to do here is we try to keep a report card on those that represent us in Washington, and we're greatly appreciative to know of anyone, because, you know, in politics, as veterans, we have to learn that we come in all shapes and political sizes, whether you may be Republican or Democrat. But when you put on that uniform, it's United States of America.
Yep.
So the result of it is that we in this together, and I'm always great to know that we have Republican or Democrat, because in politics, there are no permanent friends and no permanent enemies. So we have to understand that, especially as veterans, because both parties have done great by us and both parties have done poorly by us. We just have to work on it to make it better all the way around.
Yeah, Senator Sullivan heard my story and got back to me very quickly. And he was like, you know, we need to hop on this quick. We're going to send it down to D.C., and we're going to find out what the heck's going on, because basically you got denied treatment. You're supposed to be in treatment now, so we're going to get this straightened out, because this shouldn't have happened.
When something like that happens to a young soldier like you, and someone says thank you for your service, it's diminished. that thank you for your service is an honor that besees you because of what you've done for this nation. And now they're going to deny it to you because you have to use a prosthetic in order to navigate life. Something's wrong with this picture. We're not meeting you at with your need where you are. Okay. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So what I would like to do is to share the general number to the U.S. Senate at this point, to the Congress, to the U.S. Capitol. For those of you who do not know your representative or your senator in the House or in the Senate, now everybody, I always try to give a little bit of a civic lesson, but in every state we have two senators and we're given one representative. If you don't know who your representative is, or you don't know who your senators are, you can call the U.S. Senate. That number is 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. When you call, you will be asked if you want to speak to your representative, if you want to speak to the House. Sometimes you even get a live operator. They will, if you give them your zip code, they will tell you who your representatives are. You have a total of 3 phone calls that you should be making. Also, which brings me to another point, Kermit, if I may digress, but there is something that the DAD brings to the table today that is of big news that Joyce Trump had shared with me the last night, Joyce?
Yeah.
Would you care to share a little bit of this information?
Which one?
About the DAV COLA.
Oh, okay. Yes, I had my chapter meeting yesterday, and we were told that we are not going to be getting COLA from the Social Security or the Social Security insurance. So seeing that we're not going to get anything at all, DAV has decided to get with the Senate or whoever, somebody proposed that a one-time fee of, I think it's $530, something of that nature, and that money will go in place for the money that we should have gotten for the COLA in 2016. It's just a one-time toll. But in order to do that, we have to go on our website, which is the DAV website, and get in touch with our senators and make sure that we fill out the information for Senate Bill 2251. We want that to pass. It's the Senate Bill 2251. It's required to be passed so we can get that money, that one-time check of about $500. So go on the website, the DAV website, and see if you find that information. And please, please make sure we get that passed. The more people that do it, the better it is. So that's that. But it's a one-time. Yeah.
So there's a lot that can happen through our contact with the Congress, especially when you be able to talk about people like Herman Scott, and you're able to talk about Senate Bill SB. What is it, Joyce?
2251.
And House the House Resolution 1627, Section 1609. Now, I know we've just given everybody a lot of alphabet soup to talk about, but this is why we have America's Disabled Veterans in Action on the air, to try to give people information that's relevant to their lives. If we don't share that information, we are literally left to report of less than 15 seconds per night in your region of what's going on in the veterans' world. So what we try to do is we try to bring you a little bit at a time. We take an hour out of the day, and we come to you to share the news and information from different parts of the country. It doesn't sound like a lot that we're doing, but when you understand that you have around the globe people listening to these stories, especially those in Washington, D.C., you'd be surprised who's among our listeners. So the end result of it is that we have to document and share these stories and bring them to life to people each and every day. Kermit, tell us, how did you first hear about America's Disabled Veterans in Action?
Social media.
Okay. All right. All right. All right. You say we're pretty much, we're making a lot of noise, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's all good stuff. It's all good stuff. Whether we're talking and advocating for more money for the troops, or whether we're talking about service dogs, whether we're talking about post-traumatic stress, military sexual trauma, or even traumatic brain injury, criminal justice in veterans. We try to make it so that we touch on some aspects of whatever a veteran's going to deal with, because a lot of the states are responding to veterans' needs in many different ways. Sometimes you get veterans' courts, sometimes you get different programs that need to be focused on that may be an answer or a remedy, you know. And so that's why I try to bring this broadcast Monday through Friday to just get a little piece of it. And we hadn't had a service dog spot for a minute, but the thing is that your story is very important, because this is a treatment facility that they're bringing veterans to from across the nation. And if they're bringing you from Alaska to Washington, then who else are they bringing from other areas of the country who may be going through the same thing? Because I guarantee you, you're not alone.
Oh, yeah.
So the end result of it is that I want to thank you for sharing with us a little bit of your story and different things like that. Now, here's the other side of it. If you see something that's going on in Alaska, we kind of have to rely on you as our first person in contact in Alaska to try to get us information that's going on in your state, because there might be something that's going on. Maybe it's something that may have an effect on somebody in Georgia, you know, or another state, or, you know, but we have to share the story. And the only way ADDI really works is by these people like yourself, men and women who have served, who come forward and tell their experience, because otherwise we don't have any record of it. We didn't hear this story. You didn't hear this story on CNN. We certainly didn't hear it on the big three, ABC, CBS, and NBC. So the thing is that we noticed that during the last shutdown of the government, and we said this is something that we have to do. But more importantly, what really got me motivated was just before the shutdown, when they left the fallen on the tarmac at Dover. That was just the first time that we have been let down by the government, because the bone, if we could go all the way back to the National Economy Act that affected the bonus army, we can look back now some 82 years later, and we're fighting a lot of the same issues. So the thing about it is that we need a new source. That's why we do what we do, and that's how we got started, and so here you are, proof of it. So we hope that you'll be back and share with us more of what's going on and tell us the success stories that you see for veterans too, as well as some of the things that aren't working so well. Because, you know, you get a little bit, you know, hopefully it'll get better along the way.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate it. I have to ask you a question. I have to go to my son's birthday party. I have to run to my son's birthday party. I didn't want to be rude and cut out.
No, that's fine, because we're about at the end of the broadcast. So, but I'm glad that you had a chance, and do wish your son a very happy birthday for us.
Okay.
And we will talk to you later, because your story is important, Kermit, and I'll be in touch. I'll send you a link for the podcast in the email.
Okay.
That we've been communicating by. But you go ahead, and I'll close out the show.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Have a good one, Kermit, and we're looking to keep in touch, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Okay. Well, folks, we've got about another 3 minutes in our stream, but this just goes to show you, we don't get a lot of calls at ADVIA, but every day we play day in and day out for the last 2 years, going into our third year, we have brought you some form of news information, and we are very thankful. We're geared to cross 30,000 likes very soon, but just a little bit over a month ago, we crossed 25,000 likes. We wouldn't be crossing these things if people were not with us. I'm very thankful when I see that the slowest hour of the day, there are 2,675 people on our Facebook page. That's staggering, folks. We used to look forward to a day when we would have 2,600 people just listening to us. But obviously we have something to say here, and we have something to say about the better treatment of veterans, and we will not give up on that mission. That being said, I want to thank everybody for tuning in. We'll be back on Monday with a full week of broadcast. I want to thank everybody again. And Joyce, you got your parachute?
Sure do.
All right, we're out of here, folks. See you Monday.